Remember that music? I think it was more than 20 years that music was on daytime TV every day. Evening TV as well. That is the theme to Let's Make a Deal, which is back now if your cable or satellite system carries the Game Show Network. They are running a Let's Make a Deal-a-thon this week from 7 to 11 p.m. Central Time every night. Hours and hours of Let's Make a Deal with the star Monty Hall. Now, you see, if I were in charge of this, I would not have called it the Let's Make a Deal-a-thon. I would have called it the Full Monty.
Oh, good.
Here is Monty Hall. Hello, Monty.
Thank you. I just had breakfast. I am the Full Monty.
Hey, it's a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Oh, thank you very much, Paul.
Let's talk about the history of this show. Take me back to the beginning. What were you doing when Let's Make a Deal started?
I was working on a show on CBS called Video Village, and I was producing another show that I owned called Your First Impression on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
I hired Steve Hatos to be the producer on the show that I owned because I was busy over at the other network working. And then he and I would meet for lunch and talk about new ideas, and we came up with this Let's Make a Deal in 1963. And even though we showed it to the two networks that were interested, the third one did not carry game shows. There was no syndication or anything like that in those days. We showed the two networks the shows. They all said it was a very good idea, but what do you do the second day? Well, of course, one network took a chance on it, and we went 27 years.
Now, when you say you showed them the show, did you have to do a pilot? You went to a studio and you made it?
We did a run-through. We had a studio audience, and we simulated three doors and envelopes representing the merchandise, and a rubber chicken was the song.
Right.
And we showed it to them, and the audience loved the idea. And the networks were saying, gosh, very good, but what do you do the second day?
Yeah.
Which was a strange answer, because what do you do the second day? More of the same, right? So they finally, one person took a chance on it. We made a pilot, and 5 or 6 months later, they said, okay, you're going on.
And that was in December of 63, you had your first show.
That's correct.
Now, in that original idea that you and Steve Hatos put together, was the original idea to have people dress up in the wackiest possible costumes?
No, we had no idea this was going to happen, but when after the first week, when people realized I was selecting my contestants from the audience at random, one woman came on carrying a sign with a poem on it. I stopped and I read the poem, and she was a contestant, so the next week everybody came with a sign. And then the week after that, funny hats appeared. And then after that, it became Halloween. They start wearing these costumes and compete. We never picked the people for what they were wearing, but it added, I thought, a great touch to the show, very pictorial. I must tell you that the network didn't like the idea.
Really?
NBC said, what's going on with all these 500 people showing up in the lot with crazy costumes? And we said, well, what's wrong with it? What is wrong with it? And it became a trademark.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, when we did the show away from Los Angeles in Vancouver, Canada, and Las Vegas, and so on, people dressed up the same way. They loved to come thinking it was part of the show.
After a while, people probably did thought, and I always thought that it was part of the original idea, we'll get people to dress up in wacky costumes, but they just wanted to get your attention.
That's right. And we never selected them for what they were wearing or had on, because then it would not be Let's Make a Deal, it would become a costume show.
What was the most outrageous costume somebody wore? Do you remember any that stick out in your mind?
Well, I don't know, but there was some outrageous for me was any man showing up wearing a diaper.
Oh, yeah.
That was outrageous, and I said to my people, I would pick the folks from the outside audience to sit in the front row, the front section. I said, if I ever see a guy wearing a diaper again, you're all fired. I hated it. But outrageous, a lot of people came to the show. There were about 10 people got tickets at the same time from the same club, and they came and they carried a propeller, an airplane propeller, which they put across their laps across the whole aisle. That was kind of strange. But I cannot tell you, they went from the ridiculous to the sublime. Some of them were absurd, and some of them were wonderful. It was just added a flavor to the show.
So if you didn't select based on what they were wearing, nobody ever caught on to that, apparently, because for the 27 years the show was on and off the air, people always dressed up in wacky costumes. What were your criteria for choosing somebody?
You had to be an American.
That was it. You'd walk down the aisle, and if they were standing there, boom.
If they were breathing. Because ours, believe it or not, ours was the very first audience participation show or game show or quiz show that ever picked people who were fat, who were skinny, who were tall, who were short, who were black, who were yellow, who were white, who were brown, old or young. It was the all-American show. And if you saw those contestants, it was a cross-section of America.
Absolutely. If you were willing to put yourself under Monty's glare, and you had a glare on that show, didn't you?
No, I loved them.
Yeah, but there were times when you'd get somebody on there, and I could see that your mind was working like, oh, here's somebody I can really play with.
No. Well, you know, I would play with them a little bit, but you need to beware, because when they jump up and down and they're wearing a football helmet with a nose guard, that means a concussion, you know. So I was very wary, but I think the only reason a person could do that show for 27 years, 4,700 episodes, was to love the people.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you didn't, you couldn't go through what I went through with the, you know, wild, excited people. But they were my guests. They came into my home, my show, and we treated them all with respect.
Talking with Monty Hall, the longtime host of Let's Make a Deal, which is back on the Game Show Network on a regular basis at 7:30 weeknights in the Central Time Zone starting next week. And this week, they're doing a Let's Make a Deal-a-thon. What was the best Zonk prize you ever had on the show?
Best Zonk prize? Well, we used to manufacture, in our prop department, we used to manufacture things like double-decker dining room sets,
mm-hmm.
two front ends of cars welded together,
yes,
an outhouse on wheels, you know.
Right.
People who created those were brilliant. And I didn't know what was going to be on the show when I'd come on every day, because I didn't get involved in that end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the curtain would pull back, and there was one of these zonks, and I was excited as anybody else. I thought they were very good. I think one of the most exciting things we ever gave away, besides his and hers Cadillacs on one show, of course, in those days, his and hers Cadillacs didn't add up to more than $18,000, I don't think.
Right.
But we gave people a railroad car, which took 16 people, to the Olympics in Montreal. Their own railroad car, which was put up at a siding in Montreal for the entire Olympics.
Wow!
That was, I think, the most original and exciting thing we ever did.
And where did they start on the railroad trip? In L.A. or New York?
In L.A. And we got them onto one of the, the train lines.
Uh-huh.
And they hitched on, and that was their car with their own butler, their own food. It was fantastic.
That is a great prize.
You want it?
Yes, I'd love it.
I'll get another one for you.
That's good. Make a call for me. I'd appreciate it.
Right.
With the Zonk prizes, were there any contestants who liked the Zonk prize and wanted to take it home with them?
Rarely, but the rule on television was you were entitled to what you got on the show. You're entitled to take it home with you. Now, we knew that in the case of animals, that was a hardship for people. So we would say to them after the show, if you would like to take a washer and dryer or a small color TV set instead of the three pigs or whatever it is,
yeah,
we'll do it for you. There was one time where a person won five calves, and that it turned out to be that was a farmer. And he loved the idea, and he took them.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, cost us a fortune. all the animals were provided for us by an animal service, you know.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, you want the five calves, you'll pay for them.
Yeah.
A guy won a steer once, and he... He wanted. We tried to give him a color TV instead, and he said, no, I want the steer. It's very valuable. And so, unless you give me $1,000 instead of the $500 TV set, I want the steer. So we delivered the steer to his house.
But if you had, when you gave away the double-headed car, for instance,
yeah,
as a Zonk prize that your crew had welded together, if I was on the show and I said, you know what, I've gotten a great Zonk prize here, I'm going to take that with me.
And somebody did.
Really?
And I can't remember whether it was the two front ends welded together, but it was one of those special cars we made. And that person said, I'd like that for my backyard. And we pleaded with her. It cost us a fortune to build that. She says, no, I want it. And she got it.
Wow. Do you have any idea what happened to it? How they got it home?
I haven't heard from her.
Wow.
Nor did I hear from the woman who took the lion cub.
A lion cub?
We said, "You, the lion cub is yours, but let me warn you, it grows." And sure enough, about 3 or 4 months later, she was on the phone pleading with us to take it and give her something else.
I bet. I'm scratched all up, Monty, please.
Please, it's eating me out of the house, too.
Now, the thing that I'm most curious about is, who came up with the little deals at the end? You know, I'll give you $50 if you've got a rubber band around an American president's face, or a hard-boiled egg in your purse, ma'am. Here's $50. Who came up with those?
Well, you know, it started, that came from a show I did when I was living in Canada. And I was doing a radio show. In the last 5 or 6 minutes of the radio show, I went into the audience asking for these crazy items. And that came from the owner of the show, who was an old vaudevillian, who had in his younger years worked on the Chautauqua Circuit and the Medicine Circuit. You know what that is? That's where they go into each town, and they in a big van or a car or a railroad car, and they put the side down, and a guy starts spieling to try to get people's attention so he can sell them patent medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And to get their attention, he'd give silver dollars away to people if they had funny things in their pockets. he introduced that to me on the radio show. I started asking for things like laundry tickets and hard-boiled eggs and so on, and people were showing up with baskets full of stuff. So when I came to California years later and Steve and I were creating the show, I said, Steve, no matter what we do, we've got to save a couple minutes at the end for this because it's a winner. And it proved to be as exciting as the show.
Absolutely. You know, I'd love it when you'd go around and you'd say, you know, $20 if you have a single potato chip. And, you know, some guy would reach into his pocket and pull out a potato chip. And I'd see the look on your face like, really? You have a potato chip
in
your
pocket?
They had
everything. But what really got me is I said, I'll give you $20 for every dime you have. The woman pulled out a roll of dimes.
Oh, man.
That was a $1,000 giveaway.
Oh, man. Did people stop you on the street after that expecting you to have cash in your pockets, walk up to you? Look, I have a cherry tomato in my sleeve.
To this day, it's happened to me. I was just on a cruise in Europe. People on the ship were doing that to me.
Wow.
People all over the world, whenever they see me, they say, I've got a paperclip. What will you give me for this? And so on. And, of course, no matter where I'm standing, in front of an elevator bank, they'll all say, do you want elevator one, elevator two, or elevator three? So it became part of the language. Zonk became part of the language. And
yeah.
I don't think a week goes by that I don't get a clipping service sending me something, some reference to somebody making a deal somewhere, whether it's George Steinbrenner of the Yankees, in a big headline in a New York paper saying, George Brenner thought he was Monty Hall. He tried to make a deal today.
Right, yeah.
So it became part of the lexicon.
Let me talk about the two other people who got famous because of that show as well. First is the announcer, Jay Stewart.
Wonderful announcer.
Also used to bring the prizes down the steps to you
right.
On those trays.
And occasionally tripped.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Did the prizes ever go all over the place?
Yep. Yeah. Well, you know, it's tough carrying a big tray with things on it and trying to keep your balance.
Sure.
But we made fun of that. But when he would come to the program each day and look at the script, he wanted to see what the zonks were. And if he didn't see himself dressed up as a baby or Grandma Jay or something like that, he'd be very upset. He loved doing those zonks.
Grandma Jay in a big, oversized rocker. I remember that
times. See, on the rocker, the world's largest kiddie car and high chair and so on.
Yep. Long before Lily Tomlin was doing Edith Ann, Jay Stewart was dressed up like a girl in a big chair on Let's Make a Deal.
That's right. That's right. And boy, did he love it. You know, Jay died about 6 years ago, 6 or 7 years ago, and I was very sad. But Carol Merrill, the lovely model on the show,
mm-hmm.
moved to Hawaii with her husband. And just this year, they moved to Australia.
Ooh.
And they're loving it there. And she was in Los Angeles this past week, and we had a reunion. And she looks marvelous.
I'm glad to hear that.
And she's a great, great girl.
Did she do anything after Let's Make a Deal went off the air?
No.
That was it?
No, she had taken her money, because they all retired rich. And she took her money and bought a restaurant and lost her money.
The curse of the celebrity restaurant. Oh, no.
They all want to be restaurant. Jay Stewart bought racehorses and went broke.
Oh, have you been smarter with your money?
I don't buy racehorses. I don't buy racehorses, and I did have a restaurant once. Learn my lesson.
Now, if I'm watching these reruns of Let's Make a Deal on the Game Show Network, am I going to see you in purple leisure suits?
As a matter of fact, you see me in a blue one that I watched myself on this week. I don't know whether you saw it this week. But one of the shows they played this week, I was wearing a blue leisure suit.
And what did you think when you saw it again?
Was that dated? Yeah, but you know, you have to realize, when I did five daytime shows and two nighttime shows in 1 week, 52 weeks a year, I had to change a lot of clothes. So I had the biggest wardrobe anybody ever had.
Sure.
And I introduced leisure suits, turtlenecks, open shirts, sweaters. I said all these styles. People once said to me, says, well, you can't wear that. That's not the style. And I said very conceitedly, I set the style.
It's not style until Monty Hall wears
it. That's right.
Yeah.
But it ain't, it's, what is it? It ain't Haynes. I say, what is that Haynes commercial? I don't say it's something till Haynes says it's something.
Right, something like that.
That was Monty said, right.
Yeah. And speaking of Carol Merrill, I remember several episodes with her in hot pants. That was the opposite of you. You wore stuff in like a blue leisure suit, and now you look back on it and you go, ooh, what were we thinking? But you look back on Carol Merrill in hot pants and you go, hey, we were thinking straight.
And she looked good.
Yeah, she did.
And still to this day. Well, we formed quite a family there, because everybody stayed together, and not for the entire 27 years, because after the first 12 and a half years, we took the show to Canada for a year. We had to use Canadian models and Canadian announcer.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we came back to the States, by this time, Carol had retired. And we hired new people all over again. So, but for the first 12, 13 years, we all stayed here. But the rest of the cast, the rest of the people, the writers and the producers, so on, they all stayed intact. And we still have reunions once a year.
Talking with Monty Hall, longtime host of Let's Make a Deal. It's back on the Game Show Network on your cable and satellite systems. You're on the Big 550 KTRS. Monty, I've got a guy here who has a connection to your show. Jeff is on a car phone. Jeff, say hi to Monty Hall.
Hello, Monty.
Hello, Jeff.
How are you?
Pretty good.
Great. I was calling in. My mom was one of the big winners back in 69.
What did she win?
She won a trip to Rome. And
she never even sent me a postcard.
Well, she's going to have to. In fact, I grew up, I think you have a niece, Nicole, I want to say. My sister went to school with her. I'm trying to remember her name.
What city?
Westchester, California.
Oh, not Nicole. I had some relatives down in Westchester, but not a Nicole.
Okay.
I did have a bunch of cousins who lived down in Westchester.
Jeff, what did your mom wear when she went on the show? Do you remember?
She wore a hobo's outfit.
Mm-hmm.
My mom and dad went. In fact, because he kept asking, you know, oh, do you have a carrot in there? Do you have a vegetable? Do you have something else? And I think my dad had a pot of vegetable soup or something.
Wow. They had everything.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was really nice.
Your mom and dad had the trip to Rome, did they?
Yeah, it was a wonderful time, and it aired just before the landing of Neil Armstrong on the moon, so it was something always to remember.
Right, right.
Because the show was on just before that big
history
event.
I love to talk to happy winners.
There you go. Jeff, thanks for calling.
Good speaking with you.
Thank you.
Monty, would you get postcards from some of these people who won trips overseas?
Oh, yes, yes. People took trips, especially. Nobody who won washers and dryers sent me any cards, but the people who won major prizes usually did.
That's nice. Tell me a little bit about you, if you would. Your appearance on The Odd Couple. I don't know if you did one show or two.
I did two for The Odd Couple.
Tell me a little bit about how you got involved in that and what that was like.
Well, you know, that was the most pleasurable time of any guest appearances. You know, and I've done 100 guest appearances on shows of all kinds, from Dean Martin roasts to Providence, you know. But those shows were the best, and I'll tell you why. First of all, I'm very friendly with Jack Klugman and Tony Randall.
Mm-hmm.
So going on a show with your friends makes it easy. And when I arrived down, they called me and said, why don't you do an appearance? When I came down to the show, Gary Marshall. Tony's his father.
Yep.
Gary Marshall handed me the script. He said, listen, it's a skeleton script. We've got an opening and we've got a close. But the main show you have to help us with because these guys have a couch that burned down and they're trying to get on this mega deal to win another couch. And you've got to tell us how the show works. So if we're going through this thing, supply, not the dialogue, but supply the mechanics of it. Well, I want to tell you, we started ad-libbing on that show, and I was hysterical, and especially at one point. Jack Klugman is teaching Tony Randall how to be a contestant, if you remember the show.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony's sitting there very primly, very proper, and Jack is coming down the aisle playing the part of Monty Hall. He says, all right, now who wants to make another deal? And he's caught, and Tony just sitting there and raises one little finger. And Jack stops and says, you'll never get his attention that way. And Tony says, why not? I'm sitting here like a perfect gentleman. Well, I laughed so hard when he ad-libbed that line, I could hardly go through the show. I'm sitting here like a perfect gentleman. But those two were just so wonderful.
As I recall, the costume that they actually used on the show within a show was a horse.
One
was the front and one was the back. And I vaguely remember Klugman in the back as Oscar Madison. They'd won a couch or they'd won something. And you're asking, do you want to trade that and go on to something else?
He's yelling no.
Yeah, he's
from the back, right?
From the back of the horse saying, take the couch, take the couch, take the couch.
That's funny. You know what's interesting? The original Odd Couple was Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them were good friends of mine. Both of them died this past year.
That's right.
Very, very sad. You know, it just takes it all out of you when your good friends pass away. And two of these best friends, Matthau and Lemmon, were the closest friends in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they both died within the year.
Yeah.
But then comes Klugman and Randall, and they were splendid in that role. I don't think nobody's ever approached those four people.
Oh, I agree. You know, and people do it in community theater all over the world, and That's one of those that they should just hang up and never try again. Don't do remakes. Don't. You know, they did a black version of it. They did a women's version of
it. Yes, I know.
They should just leave it alone. It was classic the way it was. And that, those episodes with you, I think the other one that you did was you had a variety show or a talk show?
I had a talk show. And once again, we were ad-libbing most of it because when I came in, they said, let's just wing it. You guys are terrific together, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I remember the end of the show. I'm interviewing Klugman. Tony Randall's in the green room waiting to be the next guest, and he's going to sing a song. And we run out of time, if you remember on that show. We run out of time. I said, sorry, we run out of time, so we'll see you next time. And I start to sing, Stumbling All Around, Stumbling All Around, and that's Tony's song. Stumbling around, my darling. And I'm whistling and singing, and they cut to Tony in the green room yelling, he's singing my song! He's singing my song! This is all ad-lib.
Is that right?
I'm telling you, that's why I enjoyed those two shows. You know why I enjoyed it particularly? Because of the ad-lib. I've done other guest shots where sometimes I'll throw in a word that's not in the script,
mm-hmm.
and the writers will go berserk. He said and instead of the. You know, instead of just letting it flow.
Yeah.
I'll tell you another great story about guest shots. My daughter, Joanna Gleason.
Terrific actress, by the way. Terrific actress.
Wonderful actress. Done many TV series, many Broadway shows. Won the Tony Award on Broadway, you know. So she's a great actor. Now, she's on a show called Love and War. And in this scene, they're going to the Emmy Awards. And Joanna, playing the part of one of the cast of the restaurant, she's walking around saying, I hear Monty Hall is here. I hear Monty Hall is here. I want to meet Monty Hall. And all through the script, she's waiting for Monty Hall. At the end, she meets me, and whatever the scene was, it plays out. Now, and she attacks me at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I said to the writers, instead of me saying, lady, leave me alone, why don't I say, lady, they leave me alone, I'm old enough to be your father.
Mm-hmm.
I said, that would get newspaper comments from all over the country because I am her father
right.
in real life, you know. And the writer sat there and said, well, they didn't think of it, so no, they didn't think they would use that.
Oh, man.
Now, you know, that's the kind of stuff that if I was doing that on The Odd Couple, they'd have put it in right away.
Absolutely.
So that's the difference between guys who have an open mind and those who are very structured and wouldn't change a word. God help you.
Monty, when you watch game shows now, and unfortunately there really aren't that many. We've got all these reality shows, but when you watch a game show now like a Jeopardy or a Wheel of Fortune or Win Ben Stein's Money or even The Weakest Link, what do you think of those shows and their hosts?
I like Millionaire. I don't like the others. Well, yes, I like Jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
I think Alex Trebek does a good job, and Jeopardy is a good structured show.
Mm-hmm.
Millionaire is a good show, and Regis does a good job. People say, why do they have those silly $100, $200, $300 questions? I said, because that sucks in everybody in America who thinks they're brilliant because they can answer the $100 question.
Right.
But I don't care much for the other shows. Now, the show that I really don't like is Weakest Link.
Why?
Because it's demeaning. Here is a person on the show, and she is mean,
mm-hmm.
mean-spirited.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting our jollies by watching people get thrown off the show.
Yeah.
You're the weakest thing. Get out. You're through. I mean, I don't go for that. That's not my style. And I would never do that. Can you imagine me doing that on Let's Make a Deal? It wouldn't have lasted 2 weeks on the air. Because I had every opportunity to say to these people, sit down, shut up, and leave me alone. I wouldn't do that.
What kind of loser comes in here dressed in a diaper?
That's right. So instead of doing that, you just made a little gentle fun of them and went on.
Yeah.
But this show is deliberately structured to demean these people. Now, you want to know, why is this show successful? The show is successful because there is a portion of our American public, and in public anywhere, who enjoy somebody else's misfortune. They are vicariously getting a thrill about somebody being defeated, thrown out, embarrassed, like watching the other guy slip on a banana peel.
Mm-hmm.
If there was their ox being gored, they would be hysterically angry, but it's somebody else. So, ha, 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 I'm sitting here, and they throw that bum out, you know.
Yeah.
Not my style. I don't like that show at all.
I agree with you completely. The only thing I like about that show is the actual game. When they're playing the game and doing the questions and that sort of stuff, I enjoy that. But as soon as Ann Robinson starts being cute, mean/cute, I think it ruins it. Yeah.
The only thing missing in her is leather outfits and a whip.
Can you watch a new game show and tell if it's going to be a hit or not?
No. And I'll tell you why. All of us think we're geniuses. I've created many, many a game show, and I've had a few on the air. Split Second was my show, which I loved and may come back on the air next year, too. And I've created so many game shows that I thought were going to be successful, but they didn't go. They didn't work for some reason or other. Now, there can be many reasons why they don't work, the time period, or the show itself is not well received or even well constructed. But we work very hard on our shows, and now you'll put in a show on the air, and I'll say, how can that show work? And it works.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you had shown me the weakest link, I would throw you out of my office.
Mm-hmm.
So there you are.
And when Let's Make a Deal came to an end, actually, it came to an end at the network, and then you went into syndication and probably made tons more money in syndication.
Correct.
Who was it who decided to cancel Let's Make a Deal from the network, and why?
Oh, that's a show that you... Have you got another hour?
I got plenty of time. Go ahead.
I'm going to tell you, without really mentioning any names, but this shows you the frailty of having being in this business. Because you're only as good as the person's decision who's hiring you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that many customers. Now, we were on at ABC and very successful. A new president came in who, for some reason or other, did not like me or my show or the suits that I wore. I don't know. Maybe he didn't like leisure suits. I don't know. But he came on, and he decided to change our time period. Now, we had been hot and successful for 12 and a half years. And at this particular time period, he changed the time period to station option time, which means that many stations carried news programs at that hour and didn't bother carrying Let's Make a Deal. They carried their own news. So our coverage went from 100% coverage down to 80%. We lost 20% of our audience, and our ratings went down commensurately 20%.
Mm-hmm.
They said, see, you're a failure, and we got to get rid of you.
Mm.
Well, I was in shock. I flew to New York with my attorney, and we met with the entire brass, the president of the company, the president of the major company, the whole thing, everybody, because they all came to see me, and there were about 8 or 10 of them in the room, and my lawyer and myself. And I took these people apart. I really did. I was so angry, and I proved to them how they were wrong in every respect. Case history, the history of the show, etc. What they'd done with the show, what they'd done with the ratings. When it was over and we left, my attorney turned to me and says, well, you won the battle, but you lost the war. Because he was determined to get rid of you no matter what you did. You did a splendid performance. I compliment you on how you took these guys apart. But you knew you were going to lose from the moment you walked in. I said, I know, but I had to get my jollies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I had to, for my own self-satisfaction, my own ego, I had to go there and show them who was right. Even if they didn't buy it.
And so they yanked it off the air. And
so,
then
they yanked it off the air, and that's when we went into syndication.
And you showed them, didn't you?
there's no joy in being right after the fact.
True.
It's like having an argument with somebody about, having a vicious argument with somebody about something, I don't care what it is, whether it's a sports team or whether it's politics. And then later on, after this terrible argument, you find that you're right. Well, there's no joy in poking your finger at somebody saying, see, I was right. You had to be right at that time. And if you're right 2 or 3 weeks later, I don't get any joy out of that. So I didn't do much gloating when we went to syndication and did very well. I just stopped to think about the person who did that to me.
Now,
and he's still in the business.
Yeah, he's still in the business. See, that's the part that I don't like. If somebody's done wrong to me and they eventually get up out of the business and I'm still in the business, that's when I do a little bit of gloating on my own. And then I go on with my life.
You know, but what I said to myself one day? I said, I'm going to meet this guy somewhere in a dark alley. And then I'll get my jollies. But I never met him in a dark alley.
Could Let's Make a Deal be on the air today? I don't mean bring it back, but let's say Let's Make a Deal had not existed and you went to the network today and said, here's what I want to do. And you laid out the plan just like you did in 1963. Could you get it on the air in the year 2001?
I think I could, because there are many more customers than the two networks I did in 63.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always looking for new and exciting things. And now I'll tell you something about the show. I take the show. We're not on the air anymore, although we may come back in the year 2002.
Oh, really?
We just signed a deal with a major studio, film studio, who wanted to put out in syndication. But we'll wait and see about that. But I take the show out, and I played it in Las Vegas for corporate organizations. I've taken it to Hawaii, played it for a big company, you know, when they have their annual meetings and so
mm-hmm.
on. And it's gangbusters. They get the same reaction now that I did 20, 30 years ago. Because the unknown, the winning something, the losing something, still is a good format. And so, yes, I think that, first of all, I think it'll go, and I think it'll be a success again.
When you travel, do you bring a goat along as a zonk prize?
No, I don't. My wife stays home.
Oh, come on.
If she hears that, That's the end of me.
Yeah.
Especially Marilyn, because, you know, she and I, in a couple of weeks, will be married 54 years.
Congratulations.
You don't think she's going to let me get away with that, do you?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, she's sensational.
If you bring the show back in 2002, are you going to host it?
No. That's what's holding it up. For all these years, we see the last time we were on the air was 91. And we've played the reruns since then.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we try to bring it back, somebody says, are you going to host it? And I say, no, I've had my time in the studio, and I'm a lot older now. And although I can do it for commercial interests and so on, or for charity, I don't relish the idea of living the rest of my life in a studio.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do guest appearances, I'll do commercials, and I'll do my charity work, but I don't want to go live my life in a studio again.
Do you have somebody in mind?
Well, we had one person in mind, and I can't tell you the name because it's a moot situation.
Mm.
This person was successful and is successful on the air right now. This person called me and said, I want to do Let's Make a Deal if you bring it back. I want to leave the show I'm doing, and I want to do Let's Make a Deal. And we said, wonderful, because this is a powerful name. And the studio, who represents her, called me and said, fantastic. We'll go out on the road and see what the stations feel about it. They came back and said, everybody wants the show with this person. Now this person then called up and told us how much money she wanted. Did I say she?
Yes, you did.
And
it's Connie Chung, isn't it?
And that was the end of that conversation. Because
uh-huh.
It was just absolutely too much money. Now it may revive itself, but we're still looking.
Great. Well, in the meantime, the shows are rerunning now on the Game Show Network. People who have it on their cable or satellite systems can watch the Let's Make a Deal-a-thon, or as I call it, the Full Monty, 7 to 11 p.m. tonight and tomorrow night. And then you go into regular rotation on weeknights at 7:30 on the Game Show Network, where it'll live forever. You're an American icon. I know you're Canadian, but you're an American icon.
I'm an American now. I took out my American citizenship, but 9 years ago.
Congratulations. Even without that, the TV show alone and you live in the American iconography for as long as TV lasts. And you created something great, and you should be very proud of it.
I am, and I'm very pleased with this interview. It was lovely talking to you, Paul. And you have my phone number?
We do.
Anytime you want to carry it on, just call me again.
And you know what? If you get the show going, we'll do it again next year.
Terrific.
Great. Thanks, Monty.
Thank you, Paul.
Monty Hall, longtime host of Let's Make a Deal. This is the Paul Harris Show on the Big 550 KTRS.